Thank you, Blessing Zulu and Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, November 4th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Three Zimpepers journalists arrested for publishing an article alleging a senior police officer was involved in poaching activities are granted bail despite spirited efforts by the state to keep them behind bars.
Outgoing United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton starts his long goodbye to Harare, saying though relations between the two countries have improved, the sanctions regime on President Mugabe and members of his inner circle will remain in place.
It would not have been possible for Ambassador Wharton to do anything in terms of ensuring that the sanctions are lifted. In fact, if anything, it is the responsibility of the government of Zimbabwe led by President Mugabe.
And former Lancashire Steel and Warriors defense stalwart Paul Gundani dies in Kwekwe.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. Outgoing United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton has started activities to bid Zimbabwe farewell as his tour of duty comes to an end. Yesterday, he bade farewell to Vice President Pelegezela Mpoko and went on to have a Twitter chat with Zimbabweans as he prepares to leave the country. Mr. Wharton told Zimbabweans during the Twitter chat that if he had learned anything from Zimbabwe, the most important was the resilience of the Zimbabwean people in the face of hardships. He said while relations between Harare and Washington had improved, the sanctions imposed on President Mugabe and members of his circle will remain. For analysis of Mr. Wharton's time in Harare and his statements, we turned to Joy Mabenge of the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition, who says Harare has a lot to do if America is to remove the sanctions.
Well, I mean, you would understand really that there is an argument that the sanctions regime that is imposed on Harare by Washington is not a comprehensive economic sanctions regime, which is why Washington still is heavily involved in assisting Zimbabwe in various other ways other than giving money directly, for instance, to Treasury. But various other ways would include emergency services where people really need rescue, emergency services where hunger would have hit and food insecurity would have hit. You would also understand that the United States government, from what I understand, are involved in many community development projects that are done through various arms of their own operations, the USAID and many other operations. So they have always been involved in the development of the people of Zimbabwe. You would even also understand that they are heavily involved in the education sector, where each and every year quite a good number of Zimbabweans do fly several miles into the United States of America, where they acquire education at university level. And I think that's a good gesture. So I think if Mr. Wharton is talking about the improvement of relationships, he might be referring to that. I wouldn't know what exactly is sitting in his text, but I would imagine that he did not come and then stop whatever was happening between Zimbabwe and the United States government in terms of development cooperation.
Mr. Mabenge, what about the sanctions regime itself?
On the issue of the sanctions regime that is imposed on Harare by Washington, I think one thing that we must all understand is that the sanctions regime is contained in an act that was passed by U.S. Congress, the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act, ZIDERA. That, in my understanding, it also takes the very same Congress to reverse or to undo that act. Therefore, it would not have been possible for Ambassador Wharton to do anything in terms of ensuring that the sanctions are lifted. In fact, if anything, it is the responsibility of the government of Zimbabwe, led by President Mugabe, to ensure that they do that which they must have done. They must respect the rule of law. They must uphold human and people's rights. They must do so many things that are really, really known that they are not doing. If I'm talking to you right now today, and it's 7 months down the line, and journalist cum activist Itai Dzamara is still missing, and the government of Zimbabwe has not taken full responsibility, even if information is pointing to the fact that he may have been, or the allegations that he may have been abducted by state security agents, who is the U.S. Government to lift sanctions if the Zimbabwean government itself is not complying with that, which would make the sanctions regime or the restrictive measures get lifted. So I think it is about the government of Zimbabwe having to do a little more than they have done in terms of that which they know they must do, that which led the U.S. government to impose the sanctions regime that is there.
And Mr. Wharton says that the future of Zimbabwe lies largely in the hands of Zimbabweans. What can Zimbabweans do?
Sandra, we have gone full circle in terms of international assistance since about the year 2000. You would agree with me that there have been several attempts of on regional negotiations, the one that was led by former President Thabo Mbeki and former President Obasanjo around 2002. And then the fairly successful one, and you must understand what I mean when I say fairly successful one, which was led by South Africa again at the instigation of SADC and the AU. We have gone full circle, and we know what sits in international or regional mediation.
That was political analyst Joy Mabenge of the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition speaking on the line from Johannesburg, South Africa, with Studio 7's Sandra Nyaira.
Youth and Empowerment Minister Patrick Juwao today launched a $10 million youth fund in Harare to assist youth start income-generating projects. But such programs have caused divisions between the ruling ZANU-PF and opposition parties. When a similar fund was launched during the tenure of the Government of National Unity, then Indigenization Deputy Youth Minister Tongai Matutu, representing the MDCT, said an estimated 95% of those who got loans under the similar scheme were ZANU-PF members and supporters. The majority paid back the loans or used them for empowerment projects. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu asked Jiwao about the current fund.
This youth facility that we have designed together with the Reserve Bank and the financial services sector in Zimbabwe for the specific purpose of kick-starting a process of restoring confidence in the youth and financial services sector by trying to actively encourage young people that have accessed previous youth facilities to repay those facilities and as such get them back into being bankable.
So the beneficiaries are only those who have participated in such programs before?
The beneficiaries are those that have been disciplined enough to access youth facilities, develop projects that make sense, and then repay those facilities so that others are able to benefit. And that really is the important aspect, is that have you been disciplined enough to enable other young people to be able to benefit?
But what happens to those who could not settle their debts?
Those that have not been able to settle their debts will have to recognize that at some point that there will be a credit reference bill that will come to Parliament, and that credit reference bill will eventually end up with them having bad track records, effectively. And I think we have to be honest with our young people and let them know that there are adverse consequences to not paying facilities.
Youth and Empowerment Minister Patrick Juwao speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
on the internet. Find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up.
In our diaspora section tonight, we look at Britain crafting tougher immigration laws targeting illegal immigrants.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A plane has crashed in South Sudan shortly after taking off from the busy Juba airport, killing at least 25 people.
Six families from Syria and Iraq became part of the European Union's newest program to help migrants find better homes without the odious overland journey that risks lives and strains border protection resources.
And Romania's Prime Minister Victor Ponta is resigning in response to protests demanding he steps down after a nightclub fire resulted in 32 deaths last week.
Britain is in the process of crafting a tougher immigration law that is likely to affect thousands of Zimbabweans living and working illegally in the United Kingdom. According to the British government's website Visa and Immigration, the new immigration bill that has already passed its second reading in the House of Commons will make it difficult for illegal immigrants to work in the country. Businesses that employ illegal immigrants will face stiff penalties. The Conservative Party, led by Prime Minister David Cameron, says the new immigration measures will protect the country's public services and tackle the exploitation of low-skilled workers. Kate Hoy of the Parliament Group on Zimbabwe was not available for comment as she was said to be busy. We reached Ephraim Tapa of Restoration of Hope, who normally works on some immigration and human rights issues, who tells Studio 7's Kip Stube that some Zimbabweans are panicking over the new regulations as illegal immigrants won't be able to drive and live in rented homes without the necessary documents.
There are so many things that this government is trying to do in order to control immigration. Some of the regulations are that they want owners of households and employers and almost like making every institution a home office official. That is to say they must check for, the immigration status of somebody before they can give them accommodation, before they can admit them into employment, before they can open an account, before they, you know, all those kind of stuff. And even driving is also becoming a concern. So, but we are saying here, not many people are for it, not many organizations are for it. It is suffering from heavy criticisms from all quarters of the political establishment. This is draconian, I can say the least.
Looking at some of these kind of new regulations, are there any that are going to affect Zimbabweans directly?
Obviously, they will impact on other Zimbabweans, particularly those who are in the process of regularizing their stay in the United Kingdom. Some of them do not have legal assistance, and without legal assistance, you can't really mount an effective challenge in as far as your asylum claim is concerned. And therefore, you need to do some work, some manual jobs or cash in hand jobs and that kind of stuff. But before you can get that, I mean, they have to check. It means that any potential employer has to check as to your eligibility to be working. And that also means in the absence of NAS support, National Asylum Support, in terms of accommodation and stuff, it means that without papers, without the necessary status, then it means you're not going to be accommodated. You're going to find it difficult to get alternative housing. So what it then means is that you'll see Zimbabwean asylum seekers without NAS support, without relatives to take care of them, or friends to take care of them will then have to be on the streets, and some of them going into prostitution, crime, and all that kind of stuff. So yes, it is going to affect quite a number of Zimbabweans.
So now, looking at some of these regulations, actually they apply in most countries, even in USA. So do you think that maybe they're trying to contain, you know, the influx of immigrants, including Zimbabweans?
You are right. But the thing is, we have to be humane. Every human being has got rights, and those rights have to be respected as long as they still remain within the borders or the confines or jurisdiction of that state in which they are. They must be treated humanely. That's my bone of contention. Every human being has got rights that must be respected until such time when they are able to remove them back to their countries of origin.
How many Zimbabweans do you think might be affected by this?
It's very difficult to tell. As you know, some people will not want to make it known that they are in the process of regularizing their status and that kind of. So many people are not very open about their immigration status. So that's very difficult to put a figure to.
If, let's say, there are some Zimbabweans that are going to be affected, what is going to happen to them?
Like I pointed out, many will resort to crime unless they are deported or forcibly removed back to Zimbabwe. It means that they will go underground. And going in the underworld means that they will be vulnerable to exploitation, labor-wise, sexual exploitation as well, and they could also be exposed to criminal activity.
That was Ephraim Tapa of Restoration of Hope speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from London. More than 800,000 Zimbabweans are believed to be living in the United Kingdom. Some of them don't have proper immigration papers.
Three journalists from the Sunday Mail arrested Monday for publishing an article alleging a senior police officer was involved in poaching activities. Today posted $100 bail each after the state failed to furnish the court with compelling reasons to keep them in custody. Ivan Chifera has details from Harare.
In granting them bail, Magistrate Tendai Mawe ordered Sunday Mail editor Mabasa Sasa, investigations editor Brian Chitemba and reporter Tinashe Farao not to interfere with police investigations, reside at their recorded home addresses, and report to the police once weekly until 27 November when their case will be heard. Their lawyer James Mzangaza was elated by the magistrate's ruling to free his clients on bail.
We are obviously excited about the ruling. We were confident that we would get bail because the charges as laid out by the state were wishy-washy, and there is no enough evidence to support the charges. The police, it is basically the police that are offended by the refusal by our clients to disclose their sources.
He adds he will proceed to challenge the constitutionality of the Criminal Law Codification Act under which the journalists were charged.
It is our intention, as the defense, as we have given notice to the court, that at the next date of remand, which is the 27th of November, we will make an application for the refusal of further remand, or alternatively, to challenge the constitutionality of the charges as preferred by the state.
Mr. Zimbabwe Chapter National Chairman Kumbrai Mafunda attended today's hearing. He says the ruling confirms what the media watchdog has always said were frivolous charges being brought against journalists by the state.
I think, as we have indicated before, as Mr. Zimbabwe, that this was just persecution of these journalists. We actually welcome this ruling. And like the magistrate indicated, there were no compelling reasons to treat these journalists in this manner.
National Assembly Media and Information Portfolio Committee member Nelson Chamisa said it is said that the journalism profession in the country is being criminalized. The three journalists' case attracted the attention of colleagues from both the private and public media who thronged the court today in solidarity. Herald editor Cesar Zwai and senior editors from the Zimpapers Group and their reporters Daily News editor Stanley Gama and dozens of reporters from various newspapers, local and international organizations were also in attendance, as were MISA officials and Zimbabwe Union of Journalists executive members. Meanwhile, another Zim Papers editor, Takunda Maoza, was yesterday arrested for allegedly asking for a bribe from wealthy businessman Sam Levy. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
An 18-hectare plot in rural Mutasa Central constituency in Watsomba, about 40 kilometers north of Mutare City and owned by the Makunike family, has become a beacon of successful dairy farming. The plot, known as Farm 60, has drawn national attention, with owners Bot Naboth and Jane Makunike winning small-scale National Zimbabwe Association of Dairy Farmers 2015 competitions. The farm, which many say is a model of what small-scale dairy farming is all about, is changing lives in the community, as correspondent Loidam Moyo reports.
The couple inherited the farm from parents Chengetai and Nelia Makunike when they passed on. Naboth Makunike, a retired civil servant, says started serious dairy farming in the beginning of 2000 after he left work. The father of 12, 4 sons and 8 daughters said when he ventured into dairy farming with wife Jane, it was initially for subsistence until they both eventually decided to go full scale. Mr. Makunike, whose farm was voted the best small-scale dairy farm for 2015, says since that decision 15 years ago, they as a family have never looked back.
Project Chagatanga way back in 1987 with 2 cows. I was still working as a teacher, headmaster and education officer. So my father was doing it here. My father is late now, who started the farm. So when I took over in 2000, that's when I became serious about it. Well, I was doing it in a very low profile because I had other things that I was concentrating on. Later on, just about 2 years ago, I began to realize we could make more money from the cows.
He says family support has been outstanding and they are looking to turn commercial, adding more cows to their current 6. He plans to increase the herd from between 20 to 40.
And take it commercial. No longer small, but commercial. So in the last 12 months, I've tirelessly worked with my family, especially my wife and my children, to make up the infrastructure, to make sure the cows have got enough feed, to make sure everything is spick and span. And I'm glad up to now we've made it. That's what I would say about this dairy. I'm happy that we are heading towards a new era in milk production. Yes, the place is small, but I'm never going to have small productions because I also make sure I maximize whatever we have.
The family uses zero grazing for their herd, and their cattle feed on hay, maize, silage, green grass from pastures and other stock feeds to reduce chances of infection and boost milk production.
Milk comes out, there's no doubt about it. And I have very high hopes that my cows are going to be on zero grazing, no more going in the field. So my minimum number of cows I'm planning to have is about 20. 20 plus. I can go up to 40. If I grow enough fodder for the cows, that is silage, and I have enough hay, I have enough inboard stock feeds, I'll do it. There's no way we can fail to have milk when the land is there.
The farmer says each of his cows produce an average of 20 liters of milk daily, and there is a ready market at the dairy body Mutare Depot. At the farm, he has various breeds of cows, namely Holstein, Jersey, Red Dane, and crossbreeds of Holstein and Jersey, and Red Dane and Holstein. The enterprising farmer says despite his newly found fame and success, the project has had its own fair share of challenges, including financial resources to meet the high standards that are expected to be kept at all levels and times. He says stock feed and feeding regimes for the cows for maximum milk production and lactation is another area that gives the family sleepless nights.
Not just to own land, but to be productive, to own land that is productive. I'm pained by what we see countrywide. People have been given land, but they are not using the land. They are below subsistence level. We need to go commercial in every piece of land that we have been given.
Mr. Makunike, who dreams of improving infrastructure at the farm and building a standard milking parlor next year, says he is pursuing value addition to his milk. He intends to venture into pasteurized milk, cheese, and yogurt production.
Madam Zigo, Ashaik, in any venture, feeding regime is a challenge to many farmers, and we hate that. Knowledge, absorption of knowledge is a challenge. Many people listen to lectures, but they're never changing their attitudes. So there is a need for attitude change. Those are the challenges. Yes, financial, you can say there are challenges, but I'm forced to say, when you have a vision, finance follow. We have a vision. So the challenge we have as a country is people want money before they have the vision. They have no objective. I have an objective. If I get money, I know how to use my money.
Mrs. Makunike says she is proud of the project and what it has allowed the family to do. Adding transforming the project into a viable commercial enterprise will be the icing on the cake. Agriculture Deputy Minister responsible for livestock production, Mr. Pedi Janda, says Zimbabwe currently is facing serious milk shortages and importing 1 million liters a month. Adding small-scale projects like the Makunikes are really coming in handy to help meet demand.
Zimbabwe lies with small-scale farmers, but how small? We don't want small-scale farmers of 2 cattle, 3, 4, whatever it is. There's a level of viability, and I think a minimum of 10 is desirable. And then obviously we want those farmers to be trained, backed by trained and experienced extension staff.
Mr. Janda says the country currently has only 15,000 dairy cows, a drop in the ocean considering the demand. Mr. Emmanuel Zimbandu, the chairperson of the Zimbabwe Association of Dairy Farmers, says the industry requires adequate funding from the government to ensure there is sustained growth of the sector that is also under threat from foot and mouth disease. Reporting for Studio 7 in Watsomba, Mutasa Central, this is Lloyd Damoyo.
And in sports news, some sad news have just come in that former Lancashire Steel and Warriors defence stalwart Paul Gundani has died. Gundani passed away in his hometown Kwekwe after a short illness. Michael Kariati reports from Harare.
Zimbabwe football has been thrown into deep mourning following the death of Paul Gundani, the Secretary General of the Footballers Union of Zimbabwe. Gundani, the former Warriors great, passed on at his home in Kwekwe this afternoon. The spokesperson of the Zimbabwe Football Association, Modisani Gwesela, in a statement, said the football controlling body is ready of the former government. The chairman of the Zimbabwe Soccer Coaches Association, Bekinyoni, said he is really saddened by the passing on of Gundani, whom he says was his childhood football hero. Gwesela said football will never be the same without the men who had done a lot in trying to uplift the living standards of footballers in this country. Gwesela said aerial arrangements would be announced later.
That was Paul Gundani. Of course, that is the topic today on Live Talk. And now a quick recap of today's top stories. Youth and Empowerment Minister Patrick Juwawo today launched a $10 million youth fund in Harare to assist youths to start income-generating projects.
And three Zimpapers journalists arrested for publishing an article alleging a senior police officer was involved in poaching activities are granted bail despite spirited efforts by the state to keep them behind bars.
That's it for tonight. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntungamili Nkomo. This is Chris Kande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye.